And our final speaker before the question period is Gail Pikikut. Gail is from Vancouver Island, where she's worked for many years with First Nations communities, including she was senior nurse for the Cowichan tribe, the largest First Nation community in BC, for almost 10 years. And Gail's going to speak to us about trying to erase the lines, public health service integration for First Nations communities.
I have been asked to speak about a project that has done exactly what Evan was talking about, trying to erase the lines to find collaborative ways of working together. This is a piece of work that was done with funding from the federal government, from the their integration initiative funding, and it was primarily put together by a group of people from New Chanolf, Cowichan, Intertribal Health Authority, Vancouver Island Health Authority, and of course FNIH, all of the players in First Nations health on the island. So our goal was to, in a culturally safe way, provide the best integrated communicable disease control services for First Nations people. And this whole preamble of where all of the people are was a really important thing to do. It was so easy to say in the Weehawk catchment area, but it was much more important to actually say, here are where all of the people live. This is their traditional land. So we had three objectives. One was to improve the integration of the CDC services. And I do want to point out that when working with Weehawk, they were looking at communicable disease and immunization as two separate programs. But for nurses who are working in First Nations, they are one program. So communicable disease control is what we're looking at. And the second goal was to develop those common protocols, procedures, and evaluation methodology for immunization certification. And in many ways, there were those common protocols already in place, but there were some pieces that needed to be tweaked. And then the third one was to look at those common protocols for communicable disease. Now, since this is an immunization forum, I'm not going to spend much time on that. And I also want to say that, in fact, the whole notion of having those common protocols became almost a moot point, because in June of 2007, Vancouver Island Health Authority moved towards having communicable disease hubs where they had the expertise in communicable disease case management moving into different offices. And it meant then that community health nurses working in First Nations could rely on that expertise and didn't need to have that same level of expertise. Oops, skipped. So just to give you a brief overview of who's involved. So New Chanolf Tribal Council, they serve 14 communities, primarily on the west coast of the island, and they've been in health transfer since 1986. They were, I believe, the first group to be transferred in BC. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. And Cowichan Tribes Health, they provide the nursing services to one large amalgamated community in central Vancouver Island in the Duncan area. And they are the largest First Nations community in BC, and they've been in health transfer since 1991. And Intertribal Health Authority is a very complex group. They're providing direct nursing service to 8 communities. They give nursing consultation to 29 member communities and 5 non-member nations. This is speaking to that kind of complexity. Nothing's ever just straight ahead. And there is an affiliation also with 3 other First Nations health authorities under the umbrella of Intertribal Health. And so that's Haliton Health, and Quagguth District Council Health, and Namgis Health. So a huge number of communities. I'm going to give you a quick map to look. Then there were a couple of other independents also on the island. I'm sorry I'm popping so much here. So two independents, Sartlip and Paquichin. And then we have this unusual thing where we have Tillicum Laylam Friendship Center, and they actually hire their own nurses who are not working under any health authority, but they are doing immunizations and communicable disease. So we wanted to make sure that we paid attention to their needs as well. So in total, we have all of these people receiving, some also who are receiving contract services through VHA. So we have this overlay with people working directly for First Nations health authorities and some for VHA under contract providing health services. We don't have anybody getting direct health services from FNIH on the island. I'm not going to go into health transfer. I think we'll just skip that given that time is tight. But what I do want to say is health transfer, that whole initiative is where funding went from the federal government to First Nations health authorities so that First Nations could start to govern, could return to self-determination around health programming. They did that before there was the federal government, and they're moving once again to shaping and offering those services for their own people. Evan talked about the tripartite First Nations health plan. I'm going to skip that right now. The point is that we're really wanting to see the First Nations people have more say over how their health services are delivered. Health transfer does support that whole notion of cultural safety. And what does it mean? It really does mean this meaningful participation of Aboriginal people in decision-making processes. So what we were doing, this whole project, was to was an exercise in cultural safety. So we were addressing systemic power imbalances. We are addressing gaps in healthcare program delivery. And we're also looking at professional development for the healthcare providers serving those populations. So we recognize that we couldn't make any systemic changes, but we could address the gaps in CDC services through integration initiatives and professional development. There's a sense that nurses working with marginalized populations, be they street populations, be they seniors, be they First Nations, nurses who work with marginalized populations are sometimes marginalized themselves. And so it was very important that we make sure that the professional development was at the same level as the nurses in VHA. When we're looking at our first objective, the integration of the CDC services, we have VHA to the First Nations, and First Nations are in this lovely sandwich with FNIH as well. And then you have also First Nations to First Nations. So we have different organizational contexts and policies, changing organizational structures, changing programs and protocols, and not the least challenge is the different electronic health information systems. They're not integrated. I don't need to tell you what this is like and what it means. We banged our heads on the wall of just praying to get some kind of linkage. So I'll talk a little more about that in a minute. But the other thing is that our communication processes were very often informal and at the same time sometimes very complex. So we had to really work with these things. And knowing that everything was going to change and will change, we've set up some really clear, straightforward, formal communication processes through four practice guidelines. I'm not going to show them to you today. These guidelines are at the point of sign-off, but we've got many different organizations with many very different viewpoints. And so until we have legal opinion that we're totally solid to go, I can't share the guidelines with you today. they're not rocket science. They really do outline the roles and responsibilities of the First Nations Health Authorities or Services, VHA and FNIH, in both immunization and CD, case management on reserve. These guidelines don't create any new relationships. They're not legally binding, and they serve to clarify current practices. So really what they did was just lay out what it is that we're doing and to make it more clear.